From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, November the 7th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth. The kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. And we need to get things started officially. Let's do that with...
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, it's not what a teenager knows that worries his parents. It's how he found out. Yeah, and worse... It's what he plans to do with the knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
Oh, to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Big stuff.
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
You do?
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Well, kids... It was on this day in 1933, Fiorello H. LaGuardia was elected the 99th mayor of New York City. And he served in that position until 1946. And when the newspapers went on strike in the 1940s, he read the funny papers to the city's kids over the radio. I think he did that on WOR radio. Yeah. He also bore an uncanny resemblance to Lou Costello. He was very well liked. Affable. He was a Republican. Yes, back in those days, big cities in this country had Republican mayors. Yeah. And it was on this day in 1940 in Tacoma, Washington, the original Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapsed in a windstorm a mere 4 months after the bridge's completion. The cause? A lousy design. And if you'd like to see the event, you can go to YouTube and in the search bar type in Galloping Gertie. Galloping Gertie. And several choices will come up, as well as a couple of programs explaining what happened and how it happened and, you know, interesting stuff.
Staggers the imagination.
I'm going to be spending some quality time on Saturday down in Galveston County in the little town of Santa Fe, Texas. And... It's in honor of the nation's veterans. Now, Veterans Day falls on Monday this year, but we're having the event. I say we. I have been invited to an event in Galveston County by an old friend, Tommy Rahelio, who is the he's the organizer of the event. He does this every year, and it's a great event. We get together with a bunch of veterans, and we have breakfast and kind of have pretty much an all-day event. I can't think of better company. I really can't. I get a comfortable, very comfortable feeling being among veterans. Now, I'm not a combat veteran. I wish I had some kind of a war story to tell, but I don't. I sat out the Vietnam War, or at least my part of it, between August of 1968 and August of 1972. I basically sat it out in an air-conditioned office, just taking care of files, classified files. I was a librarian for a classified document library at Keesler Air Force Base, Mississippi. Really tough duty. Being pretty much across the street from the Gulf of Mexico, I think the most harrowing thing that I went through in my 4 years in the Air Force was Hurricane Camille. That was about it. And not only that, not only did I serve in the United States Air Force during that time, I was also... continuing my radio career. I worked for a radio station, a great top 40 radio station in those days, WLOX Radio in Biloxi, which was the number one top 40 radio station. Actually, it was the number one radio station on the Mississippi Gulf Coast at the time. And, you know, my time in the military is about as illustrious as watching paint dry. And then I was transferred over to Ellington Air Force Base, which was just barely an Air Force base at that time, back in 1971, to do my last year in the Air Force, which was just absolutely awesome. And I worked in a field training detachment, had a quiet office job, and finished out my last year in the Air Force. Might even have considered re-enlisting in 1972 because they were throwing a bunch of money at me, but the Vietnam War wasn't over yet. That thing was still grinding on. So I elected to get out, and boy, when it came to getting out of the service, I couldn't have been any luckier, because 2 weeks to the day before I was due to get out of the Air Force, you know, released from active duty, I got a phone call from the program director at KILE Radio in Galveston, where I had been working part-time. I'd been working Saturday evenings down there. And Rex Russell was his name, heck of a nice guy. And he called me, he says, "Hey, Dale Spence," who was their morning man, "just called and turned in his 2 weeks' notice. Would you like to do morning drive down here?" I said, "Well, heck yes." I mean, it was the immediate offer of a job. So I went, I left Ellington Air Force Base on, see if I get the dates right in my head, I believe it was August 19th, which was a Friday of 1972, and started my new job the following Monday at KILE Radio in Galveston. About a year later, I was promoted to program director when Rex left for the Beaumont Port Arthur market. And so I was very, very lucky. But I think one of the high points of my hitch in the Air Force was coming in contact with so many veterans of World War II. Now, remember, I went into the Air Force in August of 1968. I arrived at Lackland Air Force Base for my 6 weeks of basic training. This was on August 20th of 1968. And then was transferred to technical school at Keesler Air Force Base, Mississippi. Got there first part of October. And by April, I had my first duty assignment, which ended up being right there at Keesler Air Force Base. Well, after I got situated in my new job on the Air Force Base, I asked my supervisor, I said, "Would there be any objections on the part of the Air Force to my getting a part-time radio job, say evenings and weekends?" And he looked at me, his eyes got real big, and he says, "Oh my gosh, no, that'd be great. That would be great PR for us." And I thought, well, yeah, okay, great. He says, "Look, you get the gig, and I'll sign the paperwork." And he did, and I did. And for about 2.5 years there, I was the nighttime screamer, top 40 rock and roll radio DJ on the Mississippi coast. And I loved every minute of it. It was great. And then when I got to Houston with Ellington Air Force Base, I just carried that gig over, basically. I found a radio gig at the old KNUZ radio. And then I got this gig, this choice gig down at KILE Radio in Galveston, right across the street from the beach. Man, I mean, it was hilarious. So, my military career, such as it is, I used to tell people I wasn't in the military, I was in the Air Force. But just the same, I don't feel that I really need to have an illustrious combat story. Probably the closest thing I ever came to combat was storm cleanup after Hurricane Camille hit. Camille hit in, it was a Sunday, August 17th, 1969. And man, what a mess there was the following morning. Highest sustained winds in that storm were 200 miles an hour. Gee whiz. What a god-awful mess. And what an awakening for a kid who'd never been through a coastal hurricane before. Anyhow, Saturday, I'm going to be in the company of all these veterans. Some are combat veterans, some are not, like myself. But that doesn't really matter. There's a certain camaraderie that you feel when you have served in the United States Armed Forces. And I'm talking about them all. You know, the Marine Corps, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard. You just don't hear much about the Coast Guard, but man, when people are in trouble on our waters, man, the expert way in which civilians are rescued by the Coast Guard is mind-boggling. The training they go through, and when they're not rescuing somebody, they're training some more. They're never not training. You don't walk into a Coast Guard office and find somebody with their boots propped up on the desk. They're always reinventing what they do to save people. And in some cases, even save property. And so I have absolutely nothing but the most respect in the world for veterans. Another high point in my Air Force hitch was working with World War II veterans. This was a point I was going to make a minute ago. Got sidetracked. That happens once in a while when my mind is racing. But I went into the Air Force in 1968. Well, at that time, there were a lot of World War II veterans who were coming up on the last few years of their 30-year military career. They started out, people that I worked with, started out with the old Army Air Force or the Army Air Corps. And then, of course, what was it, 1947, when the Air Force became its own branch of the armed forces. And I worked with a lot of people who were World War II veterans. Some of them were civilian government employees. I worked with one fellow. I wish I could remember his first name. He was Mr. Whitaker, and he was a high-ranking civilian employee. In World War II, he was a tank driver. He used to make jokes about the fact that that's why his hands, when he stands up, his hands hang below his knees, because he was steering the tank with those levers. But one fellow in particular, who had an office right next door to my office in the 3750th Technical School headquarters, was a man by the name of Travis Hoover. Now, Travis Hoover flew the second plane in Jimmy Doolittle's raid on Tokyo and lived to tell about it. And met the man. He was kind of a serious fellow, at least so I thought. Until the day I asked him, because I had read the book, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, back when I was in junior high school, and, of course, saw the movie. And I asked him, I said, "Are you the man who flew the second plane in Doolittle's raid?" Well, he cracked a grin, and he said, "That's right." And I said, "My God," and there I am standing inside the building, and I just rendered a salute to the man. I said, "When I get home tonight, I'm going to call my dad up in Ohio and tell him who I just met." And it's experiences like that that I have enjoyed time and time and time again in visiting with fellow veterans at events like the one coming up on Saturday. And I've been to several of these already. You couldn't keep me away. Quality time with quality people. You would have to have been living under a rock not to know who Peanut and Fred are. Peanut the squirrel and Fred the raccoon. You know, when a celebrity is removed from the public eye, generally the online community reacts. And that was the case with the euthanizing of Peanut the squirrel and his buddy, who lived in the same household, Fred the raccoon. And believe it or not, it caught the attention of both Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And Vance has revealed that Trump is furious over this euthanizing of Peanut and Fred. A viral internet sensation, by the way, these two, owned by Mark Longo. Now, the incident sparked a firestorm. In fact, that's kind of an understatement among conservatives, with many of us seeing it as an example of government overreach. Now, if you're not hip cool in what's happening now where the story is concerned, Peanut was seized and euthanized by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, or the DEC. And their concern, supposedly, was due to concern about rabies exposure. Now, clearly, if these knuckleheads in the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation had paid attention to the postings by Mark Longo and his wife, they would have seen that both animals were perfectly healthy. No sign of rabies, no sign of strange behavior on the part of the animals or the humans. But yet, they engaged in a raid on their house, a five-hour raid, and confiscated the animals and ultimately euthanized them. Wow. The DEC up there in New York reported that a person was bitten by the squirrel. It was one of their investigation team, and it necessitated rabies testing. But the decision had been met with widespread criticism and skepticism, of course, not the least of which were the crack team who just won an amazing election here the other day.
I know Don's fired up about Peanut the Squirrel. We were on the way down here from Cincinnati. He was like, you know, is it really the case that the Democrats murdered the Elon Musk of squirrels? And I said, yeah, it sounds like, have you seen the videos of this squirrel? He's like, he's a genius, or he was, unfortunately. But the same government that doesn't care about hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrant criminals coming into our country doesn't want us to have pets. It's the craziest thing.
It really is the craziest thing. The incident has even drawn attention from high-profile figures beyond the political sphere. You have Elon Musk, for instance, having expressed his disapproval of the government's actions, sharing an AI-generated image of a Jedi squirrel to emphasize his point. He stated on social media, "Government overreach kidnapped an orphan squirrel and executed him." Now, Vance recounted Trump's reaction, saying he was like, you know, it really is a case that the Democrats murdered the Elon Musk of squirrels. So this comment kind of highlights the political dimension that the incident has taken on, with conservatives viewing it as another example of government overreach under Democratic leadership. The Democrats are not public servants. At least that's not how they see themselves. Democrats see themselves as not leaders, but rulers. And that's the difference in mental makeup between conservatives and leftists. I'm not going to say liberals, because I think the liberals are really on our side. Think about the way we were back in the 60s. We were liberals. We were anti-war. We were for the ecology. We were for equal rights, equal opportunity. We still are. That's the Republican Party today. It's the Democrat Party that's tyrannical in their attitude. They get elected into public office, and right away they think they are the ruler. They're a king or they're a queen. And I see that all the time with the Democrats here in Texas. I mean, their behavior, thank God, Texas is a red state. But you go into the big cities, and by and large, the big cities are run by Democrats, particularly Houston and Harris County. Harris County used to be Republican up until a few years back. And here again, I'm not going to express my dissatisfaction with Republicans in Texas, particularly on the local and municipal level. But they really behave. They get into public office and they behave like they are rulers. So the euthanization of Peanut, while it has, I guess, a humorous side, tragic and humorous at the same time, it's raised important questions about animal rights and welfare. Now, New York state law requires a license to own wild animals. And this is where Longo, I guess, screwed up. He was reportedly in the process of obtaining a license when this incident happened. Now, critics are arguing that the DEC's actions were excessive, with Longo describing a large raid, 5-hour-long raid on his home, to seize not just Peanut, but the raccoon as well. So in response to the public outcry, a state lawmaker has proposed Peanut's Law, Humane Animal Protection Act. And this would be aimed at preventing similar incidents in the future. And this action basically underscores the impact that Peanut's stories had on public sentiment and policy discussions. But I think what I find very interesting was the outpouring of support for Peanut and the Longo family. It's been huge. Even a GoFundMe page titled Call for Justice for Peanut the Squirrel and New York State DEC Reform has raised over $158,000 already, demonstrating the support, the emotional connection that many felt to this viral celebrity, these two viral celebrities. Although Peanut did get more attention than Fred the raccoon. Fred was cute, though. So the debate, you know, is going to continue. And the incident serves as a rallying point for anyone concerned about animal welfare and government regulations. I love animals. Okay, I'm not a PETA member. In fact, I used to poke fun at PETA as standing for people eating tasting animals. But actually, I love animals. I don't like it when somebody kills a rat snake, for instance. Rat snakes are good, especially if you live in a rural area and you've got some land. You have a barn on your property. If you have a stable where you keep horses, you want to have rat snakes around. Keep those rodents out of there. And rat snakes are just downright goofy. When they're fed, they're lazy. They stay in one place. You can walk right by one and he's not going to flinch. They're amazing. Amazing reptiles they are. I put them pretty much, rat snakes, I put them in pretty much the same category that I do a regular box turtle, you know, a red ear turtle. So the involvement of high-profile figures like Trump and Musk has amplified the discussion in this particular case, and I hope it has a wide-ranging effect, and thereby ensuring that future Peanut the Squirrels and Fred the Raccoons will at least have a fighting chance of staying alive. I've read a couple of articles lately about this, and in each case, the author of the article would preface things by saying, in a startling revelation. You know, and I'm like, this isn't so startling. Why would I be surprised that Catherine Herridge is accusing CBS News of censoring a report on Hunter Biden's laptop prior to the presidential election of 2020. I don't find this at all surprising. I mean, we've seen once again this election cycle, 4 years after the last one, that the entire mainstream media is in the tank for Democrats. Democrats could commit genocide. They could tank the U.S. economy. They did. And yet the mainstream media still thinks the Democrats are more worthy of helming this ship of state. I'll never understand this. And I'm an old, old dude. I'm really old. And I've lived a long time. I've gone through I don't know how many different elections. I suppose I could sit here with a calculator and add them up, you know, both national and local elections. And it never ceases to amaze me, the outright ignorance of people who vote for Democrats. So anyhow, Catherine Herridge, you understand, used to work for Fox News, then she went to CBS, and then she was fired from CBS because she was seeking the truth. So if her allegation is true, and it appears that it is, it's a clear violation of journalistic ethics. But then again, when it comes to the mainstream media, screw journalistic ethics, particularly if it means supporting a Democrat. So they spiked the story, very likely impacting the results of the 2020 election. I don't think that's going to happen again anytime soon. Certainly didn't happen for this election. So Ms. Herridge, who is an excellent journalist, she's proven that time and time again. And she's come forward accusing CBS News of censoring her investigation on Biden's laptop, that's Hunter Biden's laptop, just before the critical election of 2020. Now, Herridge reportedly shared her findings, which included evidence of Hunter Biden receiving a substantial retainer from a Chinese energy firm. And this investigative piece, backed by collaborative emails and court records, remained unaired, as 60 Minutes instead aired a report claiming the laptop was unverifiable, which was complete bullcorn. So the decision not to broadcast Herridge's investigation caused a lot of internal strife, as you can imagine, because there are honest people within these organizations. They don't have much of a voice, but there are honest people working there because it's a gig. And she expressed frustration over CBS's unwillingness to allocate resources for her findings, despite what appeared to be all the evidence in the world. In other words, CBS was covering Hunter Biden's ass. And Herridge's efforts to authenticate the data were just literally undermined by CBS's choice to publicize a conflicting story that disregarded her verifications. It's insane. And the consequences of these events have been far-reaching, thank God. Herridge left CBS in, I guess, what you could call a climate of managerial instability, with reports indicating her firing coincided with company cuts, which they did. You see, these mainstream media organizations are so bad, the public doesn't believe in them, and they're finding it harder and harder to sell advertising airtime. It's not a surprise to me because I know how the system works. What surprises me is that the management and the ownership, even more so, the ownership of these mainstream media outlets continue to lean leftist. You know, if you took one of the three big networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, pick any one of those, and you were to go in as management, take them over and redirect them as a conservative network, I guarantee you, within a very short time, they would be the dominant of the three networks. So anyhow, allegations against CBS executive Ingrid Cyprian Matthews for sidelining journalists, including Herridge, have surfaced now. Oh, here comes the truth, I can just about guarantee you. And Cyprian Matthews' subsequent resignation after the 2024 election has added fuel to the ongoing discourse about media accountability. And this is a discourse that needs to be held as loud as you can make it, as public as you can make it, and in written accounts, it needs to be written in bold print and italics. The mainstream media lies to you constantly, and they lie to you just as much through omission as they do by what they actually lie to you about. Because omission is a form of lying, particularly the way the mainstream media does it. And I have been harping on that for 15, 20 years. I've been doing these podcasts now for almost 20 years, and this is just stuck in my craw all these years. I don't know if that's ever going to go away, but I'd like to see one of the three networks go conservative so you could see what the effect of that would have. The lovely Monique Marvez returns to the Comedy Corner because she's funny.
And they love music. We bond over music. That's the thing we bond over on Sirius XM. We go between hits. You know, they like hits. It's channel number one. And we go back and forth. Listen to my channel, their channel, my channel, their channel. We talk about things, you know. And they're just adorable. And they hear a song, and they don't know it. And they're not listening to the DJ. They don't have to do that because they can Shazam it. That's a magic trick. They take the phone out and they wave it around in the car. Know what song it is. And then they put it on their Apple playlist. Bam, bam. Just like that. It's the playlist. $13.99 a month. Guess who pays the subscription? My mother. Say, you know what Auntie Monique used to do to get music? They go, what? Back in the 1900s? I go, what? I go, first of all, when you went in the car as a family, somebody would yell, shotgun! You can't do that now. People react strongly. But you would yell, you know? And then you'd get in the front seat, and whoever sat in the passenger seat was in charge of the music. And it wasn't an app, and it wasn't connected to your phone. It was a radio with buttons. And you had presets, and you had an antenna. And you would go eat at a burger joint and you'd get an antenna topper. You had a little ball on the top of your antenna that let your neighbors know if you were what team. If you were Team Whataburger, you know what I mean? Or you were a Jack in the Box, whatever, you had that antenna topper. You're looking at me like this is a history lesson. Yeah, you call your parents when you get home and you tell them how lucky you are. To be born in Shazam days. I tell them, I said, you would be listening, and then you would hear a song on the radio, and then you would run to the store, and you would hum it to the guy behind the counter. So he could try to figure out what the new hit was, because the DJ didn't say the name and you wanted to buy it, you know, and you'd be like, oh yeah, you spin me right round, like a record, baby. Yeah, you'd be, oh, that's, and they always had a bad attitude, because everybody that worked in a record store was in a band. And they didn't want to be there. I think they're the parents of the people that work at the Mac store now. Second generation aggravated retail people.
No, that's right. Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.